Mehr der Rappaport, Parshas Ba'aloischa.
Birshus, Kol HaKol, HaKodesh HaZeh. Some time ago, about a year ago, the Jewish world, the Yiddish Welt, was rocked by a tragedy, a terrible, shocking tragedy. The Rabbi Eleza Abu Chatzera, who was a grandson of the Baba Sali, was considered a great tzaddik. He was, in our generation, he was somebody who was unparalleled regarding his Shmira Senayim, regarding of his eyes. He would wear a hood. In England, we'd probably call him a hoodie. And he guarded his eyes. It was exceptional. It was the epitome of Shmira Senayim in our generation. And he was murdered by a Yid, by a Jew. Not any Jew, but a Jew who held him in high esteem. A Jew used to come into him every single week. A Yid who truly believed that this person is a great godel, somebody who's extremely close to the Rabbeinu Shloilom, a person who would go to get advice and brachas from every week. Yet at the same time, he cold-bloodedly murdered him. With such a coldness, callously planned to murder him. So you'll say, okay, he's a shoyti, he's not normal. Chazal say that ein adam oseh avera, a person never does any avera, elim kein nichnas bo ruach shtus. A person who does an avera is also not normal. It's a ruach shtus. But how could it be possible that a person should see gadlus, greatness in front of his eyes, and believe in that gadlus, in that greatness, and yet so cold and unmovingly go and murder that very person he so much believes in? And this echoes the midas of Esav. Esav Arosho, who truly appreciated his father, Yitzchok Avinu, his gadlus, his greatness, v'horaya, when Yaakov stole the brochas, Esav said to his father, "Habrocha achas, don't you have one brocha for me?" He desperately wanted his father's brocha. He believed in the power of his father's brochas. And his kibud av, the honor of his father, was unbelievable. Yet at the same time, he was so cold and calculated as to bluff his own father. And he was adept at trapping his father, his holy father, Tzaddik, by asking him questions to make him appear unusually pious. He used to say to his father, "Father, how does one tithe straw? Father, how does one tithe salt?" So at the same time as he held him in gadlus, he was willing to stand in front of that very person he held in such high esteem and bluff him. And this echoes, this is Esav. And we find an interesting story in Melachim. Elisha was in Yericho, and the people of Yericho complained to him that the water's gone bad. They're complaining, the residents are complaining, we've got no water, the land is deadly, and who knows what trouble there was going on there because of this. There's no waters, there's famine. So Elisha takes a little bit of salt and he sprinkles it into the water, and the water is miraculously cured. And hey, some oifus. And then he goes and leaves, and he goes up to Beis Kail. And some Na'orim Ketanim, some young lads, see him, and they mocked him. And they say to him, as Elisha's traveling up to Beis Kail, after he's cured the waters miraculously, they say to him, "Aleik Eireach, Aleik Eireach. Go on up, bald head. Go on up, bald head." Now, I don't know what's wrong with being bald, but that's how they mocked him. My father-in-law used to have a sign on his wall, and he used to say, "God only created a few perfect heads. The rest he covered with hair." So this is what they said to him. But Chazal tell us, that they weren't actually mocking his baldness. What they were saying to him was as follows: these Na'orim Ketanim, these young lads, had a business going. And their business, they used to import water into Yericho. They used to import bottled Evian water, pound a bottle. So they used to have a good business going. This was their Mekorei HaParnosa. It was their livelihood. Now that he'd cured the water, so they were left bereft of their Parnosa. They had no income anymore. They were laid bare of their income. So they said to him, "Alei Kereach, go on up, Kereach, shekrachto oleinu samokim, you've laid bare our source of income, our livelihood." So the Pasuk says that Elisha turned around And the Pasuk says, Vayirein, he saw them. And then, Vayikalelein b'shem Hashem, he cursed them in the name of Hashem, or possibly with the name of Hashem, like Moshe Rabbeinu. And what happened? Two bears came out of the forest and tore apart 42 of these young lads. And the Gemara brings a machloikas Rav and Shmuel. According to one man to Omar, there was a forest there, but there were no bears there. Where did the two bears appear from? Elisha's moifas, another moifas. Elisha had caused these bears to be created, and they came out of the forest and tore apart these 42 young lads from Klal Yisrael. And according to the Manda Amor, according to the other Manda Amor, there was no forest either. Lo dubim v'lo ya'al, there was no forest and there was no bears, and the whole thing was created by a moifas of Elisha. And out of interest, when we say in Yiddish, you want to say, ach, nish gestoigen, nish gefloigen, there's never been such a thing, it's shtusim. In Ivrit we say, lo dubim v'lo ya'al. That's in modern Hebrew. The expression comes from this Gemara. There was no forest and there was no bears, and Elisha created it, and then two bears came out and tore apart these 42 young lads. And this is the story that we find in Melachim Beis. Now, common sense would dictate that Elisha wasn't an overly sensitive person, and he wasn't particularly upset about the fact that they were mocking his boldness. And even if you'll say that they weren't mocking his boldness, you'll say, like the Gemara says, that they were complaining to him that he had laid them bereft of their panosa, of their livelihood, alei kireach. Would Elisha have exacted such terrible punishment from them? 42 Jewish young lads to be torn apart in such a terrible fashion, two bears. And this is not a made-up story. This happened. This really happened. So I think the Gemara asks the question. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Vayirein, he saw them. Asks the Gemara, Maro, what did he see? And here we have a machloikas, a four-way machloikas, where Rav says, Ro Mamish, he looked at them. And when a tzaddik looks at somebody, that can cause an effect. Shmuel says, no. He saw that Nisabro Imam Beyoim HaKippurim, their mother had conceived them on Yom Kippur. That's what Shmuel says. And Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha says he looked at them and he saw that they had long locks of hair. They sported a fashionable hairstyle like the Amorites used to wear. Chukas Agoy, a bloiris. And Rabbi Yochanan said he saw that there wasn't a lachluchis shel mitzvah. There wasn't even a trace of a mitzvah in them. Not in them, not in their descendants, ad soif kol adoris, until the end of all generations. That's what he saw. This is a four-way machlokes. Continues the Gemara and says, Omar Rabbi Chanino, says Rabbi Chanino, Bishvil arboim v'shtayim korbonois, shehikriv bolok melech moyov, in the merit of the 42 korbonois that we're going to read about in a few weeks' time. When Bolok hired Bilam to curse Klal Yisrael, in order to facilitate those curses, we know that Bolok, the king of Moyov, sacrificed 42 korbonois. Says the Gemara, in the merit of these 42 korbanos that Balak was zoyche to be makriv, that's why these 42 young lads were torn away from Klal Yisrael. Asks the Gemara a contradiction. V'omar Rabbi Yehuda Omar Rav, didn't Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Rav lo oylom, a person should always yasoy kodem bat Torah uve mitzvahs, a person should always perform mitzvahs and learn Torah afilu shaloy lishma, even for ulterior motives. Shemitoich shaloy lishma, if he learns Torah for ulterior motives, in the end, it'll end up being lishma for the sake of heaven, for the sake of the Rabbeinu Shloinom. How do we know this? In the merit of the 42 korbonos that Balak sacrificed, he merited to have as a descendant Rusa Moyavio. And he therefore ultimately ended up having a descendant Shloima HaMelech. And about Shloima HaMelech, it says, Elef korbonis yakriv Shloimoi. Shloima HaMelech sacrificed 1,000 korbonis, not Shloi Lishma, not for ulterior motives, but Lishma for the sake of the Rebbeinu Shloilom. So, a person should always learn Torah and perform mitzvah Shloi Lishma, like Balak. Because ultimately it ended up being Lishma, it ended up being Shloima HaMelech's korbonis, being Lishma. So asks the Gemara, contradiction between these two statements of Rabbi Chanino and Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav. What did Balak merit? Did he merit that these 42 young lads were torn out of Klal Yisrael? Or did he merit that he had Rusam Ayavion, therefore ultimately Shlomi HaMelech as a descendant. Asks Gemara, there's no contradiction here. Ta'avosoi mi'olik lalahava. His desire, at the end of the day, was to decimate the nation of Klal Yisrael, to decimate Klal Yisrael. So because Lamaisi was Makriv Korbonus, so he ended up having Rus and Shlomi HaMelech as a descendant. But because his intention, Ta'avosoi, his desire was to decimate Klal Yisrael, true that his desire wasn't realized, but it did help in the sense that these 42 young lads were torn away from Klal Yisrael in the times of Elisha Hanavi. And this piece of Gemara clearly needs explaining. Because if you think about it, these two stories were over 400 years apart. When Balak was makriv these korbanos in the story of Elisha Hanavi with these 42 young lads, was over 400 years apart. What is the connection between those two stories? Secondly, I'm a shtickle yekka, very English. So I like rounded off numbers like 40, like 50. What's 42? Why 42? Why wasn't he makriv 40 korbanos? Should be makriv 50 korbanos. Why punct 42 korbanos? What is the significance of the 42? Now there's an interesting malbin. A posuk in this week's parsha, Ba'alo Yischa, discusses a posuk. The malbin brings down from the Mekubalim. I'm not very well versed in Kabbalah, so I don't really understand these things, but one thing I know is that the Malbim quotes the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists. And the Mekubalim say that the 42 Masois, the 42 journeys that Klal Yisrael travelled in the desert at the bidding of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, they corresponded to one of the Shemis of Hashem. Hashem has many names. One of the Shemis of Hashem is the Shem Mem Beis, the Shem of Hashem, which has 42 letters. And that's the Shem Hashem when we say, before Lechodoy, the Ono Bechoyach, we say in the morning, Ono Bechoyach, that is the Shem Hashem of 42 letters. And Ono Bechoyach, Aleph, is the first letter, Bechoyach, Beis, Gedulas, Yamin, Chotat, Etzuro, each word, each letter of, is this 42 letters, and those 42 letters make up a name of Hashem. Says the Malbim, Hashem the Mekubalim, that the Shem Hashem of 42 letters corresponds to the 42 Masois, the 42 travels that Klal Yisrael traveled at the beginning of Hashem. And Malbim says, with this idea, he wants to explain a document, a manuscript that he was shown when he was in the town of Cherson. He was shown a Maimer Pli on an unusual document written in the name of Reb Shimshon Ostropolia. A document, the words are to be said, Beis Magefa, the time of plague. And what was this statement? What was this document? Says the Malbim, B'Shem Reb Shimshon Ostropolia, it stated as follows. It stated that when Klal Yisrael left Ramses, they weren't sure whether they should travel to Sukkos, to Kehil Osor, or to Moseiros. So they had to ask Hashem, and Hashem said they should travel to Sukkos. And then they weren't sure whether they should go to Eson, to Chatzeros, to Serah, or to Etzion Gover, and the Rabbi Yishlam said they should go to Eson. And then they weren't sure whether they should go to Morah, to Tachas, to Arvo Ismoyov, and then the Rabbi Yishlam said they should go to Morah. So they had to ask the Rabbi Yishlam, and so on and so forth. This is a statement that he was shown in the town of Cherson, in the name of Reb Shimshon Ostropolia, to be said in the Be'is HaMageifo, and it's a Maimer Pliyo, and they asked him to explain what this means, this to decipher this unusual document. And so he said like this, he said that the 42 Masois, the 42 travels of Klal Yisrael corresponds to the Shem Hashem of 42 Oisius. And Klal Yisrael weren't told which town to go to. They were told which letter to go to, that the letter in the name of this Shem Hashem. If you list out the 42 letters, and then underneath that you list out the 42 Masois, each town, each place will correspond to one letter of this Shem Hashem of 42 Oisius. So they weren't told which town to go to. They were told to go to the place that corresponds to the letter Beis in the Shem Hashem. And that's Prat Al Pi Hashem Yisau. They travelled according to the name of Hashem. Al Pi Hashem Yachanu. They camped according to the name of Hashem. But when they were told to go to the letter Beis, they weren't sure, because if you look in this Shem of Hashem of Ono Bechoyach, you'll see that there's three bases. And the three bases correspond to Sukkos, to Kehil Osor, and to Moseiros. So they weren't sure which base to go to. So Moshe Rabbeinu had no choice but to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him which base to go to, the base that corresponds to Sukkos. That's why they went to Sukkos. And then they were told to go to the place that corresponds to Gimel. But there's four Gimels in the Shem Hashem. Which Gimel? Is it the Gimel that represents Esom, Chatzeros, Serach, or Etzion Gover? So Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask Hashem, and Hashem told him to go to the Gimel that corresponds to Esom, and so on and so forth, the three Tofs, and there's four Yuds, and so on and so forth. That's how the Malbim explains this Maimon. Says the Malbim, without he can explain something superfluous in this coming week's Parsha, in Parsha's Baal Oysecha. The Pasuk says, Al Pi Hashem Yisol, Val Pi Hashem Yachanu, and then it says, Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe. Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe is superfluous. Of course it was Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe. It says, Al Pi Hashem Yisol, Val Pi Hashem Yachanu. Says the Malbim, Al Pi Hashem Yisol, they travel according to the name of Hashem. Val Pi Hashem Yachanu, they camped according to the name of Hashem. But they weren't sure which letter, which base, which gimel, which yud. There's three gimels. There's four gimels. There's three bases. There's three tofs. There's four yuds. Al pi Hashem biyad Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu atos the Rebbeinu Shloilom is al pi Hashem in the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu. So says the Malbim pshat in this maimel plia. So the Shem Hashem, the Masois, correspond to this Shem Hashem. Now, how is the Masois, the travels of Klal Yisrael in the desert, they are described? How do we describe them? The Rebbeinu Shlom himself described the Masois. The Rebbeinu Shlom describes the Masois as follows, the beautiful pasuk that we say on Rosh Hashanah. And Rebbeinu Shlom says to us, to Klal Yisrael, Zocharti loch chesed neuraich. I remember, for your sake, chesed neuraich, the kindness of your youth. Ahavas kluluseich, the love of your bridal days. Lechteich acharai bamidbol, when you followed me in the wilderness, be'eretz loy zeruo, in an unsown land. So Rebbeinu Shlom describes the state of Klal Yisrael, of us, when we were traveling in the desert, the 42 Masois, as ahavas kluluseich, the love of the bridal days. That's what we call the Shana Rishona, the first year. Now when I try and think back to the Shana Rishona, I think to myself, it wasn't, the situation was, you want a coffee, make it yourself. Why should I change the baby? You change the baby. Come on, get up for the baby. Ooh, it was the other way around. Darling, would you like a coffee? Please sit down, his supper's ready for you. No, leave the baby, I'll deal with him, you're tired. Avas kulei saich, the love of your bridal days, this is a Shana Rishona, this is the epitome of Av, or the epitome of closeness between Ish v'Isha. And we know that Klal Yisrael are meshulim lechosn v'kala. Klal Yisrael and the Rebbeinu Shlom are equated to a chosn v'kala. And those days in the wilderness are equated. The Rebbeinu Shlom says it's avas klulei saich. It's the love of the bridal days. It's the epitome of closeness. It's the epitome of dveikus b'Hashem. And this is what the 42 represents. The Shem Hashem of 42 represents the epitome of closeness to the Rebbeinu Shlom. Why was Balak makriv 42 korbonos? Balak wanted to attain kirvas Elohim. He wanted to achieve an unbelievable closeness to the Rebbeinu Shloim through being makri the 42 korbonos, through this name of Hashem. He wanted to harness those powers, that closeness to the Rebbeinu Shloim. And he did attain that closeness. Ad kedei kach, that because he achieved that closeness, he merited to have Rus HaMoyoviyo and Shloim HaMelech, and ultimately David and Melech HaMashiach, all descendants of Balak. But yet he was so cold and calculated that he wanted to harness those very powers to decimate Klal Yisrael. For his own ulterior motives, to curse and decimate Klal Yisrael. And true, he never succeeded. But what he did manage is that over 400 years later, he managed to inject that very venom into Klal Yisrael with these 42 young lads who were torn away from Klal Yisrael. These 42 young lads who saw Elisha Hanavi, the great Navi Elisha, in front of their very eyes. Not only did they see him, but they saw him perform a miracle where he took a little bit of salt and he cured all the waters. They saw greatness in front of their very eyes, and through him they saw the Rebbeinu Shloilom. Mibsari echze eloika. Yet, they were so cold, and so unmoving, so calculated, as to mock him, to complain, They weren't scared of him. They had no fear. Al tigu v'mishichoy. Says the pasuk. Vayirei misovem. Asks the Gemara, Maro. How can it be possible that 42 Yidden, Jews, should end up looking at greatness in front of their very eyes and see it in front of their very eyes? Gadlus shebegadlus, a novi, a prophet who performs such miracles, and it can be so cold and calculated as to mock him and say, Aleikei Reach, Aleikei Reach. Asks the Gemara, Man Ro'o, what did Elisha see in these 42 lads that they should end up becoming like this? And here we have a four-way machlokes, where Shmuel said, you know what he saw? Vayirei, he saw them. Rosh and his Abro Imam B'yoyim HaKippurim, he saw that the mother had conceived them on Yom Kippur. That because of our petty and paltry taivas, we can destroy and cause such terrible damage. And Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha says that he saw Chukas Agoi. They had long locks of hair like the Amorites sport, a bloiris. Because we expose our children to all the negative influences in society, which influences them, and then they copy it, and this is how they end up. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, they didn't have a bloiris. They didn't look like the Amorites. No, they were dressed like Frum Yidden. They had black jackets and white shirts and big, white, black borsalinos. But there was no lachluchis shel mitzvah. There was no trace of a mitzvah. But the Gemara uses a lashon, an expression of lachluchis. Lachluchis is moisture. Avada, they went to shul and they davened shachris and they went to learn and they performed every single mitzvah. But it was kemitzvahs anoshim ilumado. They performed the mitzvahs, functionally like robots. But there was no moisture. There was no warmth. There was no movement. They weren't moved by the Yiddishkeit. They were cold. There was a coldness to the Yiddishkeit. Not in them was there a trace, was there a moisture of the mitzvah. Not in their children, not in their descendants, outside kol adoros. And this is the machloikas we find in the Gemara. And this is how a frum yid, a little now cotton orim ktanim, some young lads, could end up having the midos of Esav and the midos of Balak, where at the same time when they see greatness, they can be so cold as to be unmoved. I remembered yesterday, I mentioned it, that I remember by the Levaya of Rav Shach, they put his own personal set of Avi Ezri, the great Sefer Avi Ezri, which he'd spent all his life and with immense toil and koiches to write. They put it on the mito by the Levaya to bury it with him. And somebody by the Levaya actually stole it. So somebody at Rav Shach's Levaya, it's mind-boggling to think that somebody could be so cold and unmoving. Number one, it's Rav Shach, one of the greatest leaders in Klal Yisrael. With all his 104 or 107 years, with the great Avi Ezri, that every year he relearned it and relearned it, and his last ounce of strength he put into it. And here we have Rav Shach, who had gone from this world. And when we see a dead person, we realize that Yesh Din V'Yesh Dan is a Rabbeinu Shloimeh. And this person can be so cold and unmoving as to go and steal it, because one day he'll be able to make some profit, possibly. Even though he won't be able to publicize it in the near future. He'll have to wait probably 100 years. Maybe his grandchildren might make some money from this Avi Ezri. As a Yid, can live in such a contradiction, that is what Balak was. And this was the Midas of Esav, about which Yaakov Achicha said, Bo Achicha Bemirmo, your brother, Begematria 42, Bo Achicha Bemirmo, with slyness. Bo Achicha. Pasuk in Azinu says, "Vayar Hashem vayinotz mikas bonov ubnoisov." Translated, the beautiful Shira in Azinu, the pasuk says, "Vayar Hashem saw, we'll see, vayinotz, and he will be provoked mikas from anger, bonov ubnoisov, of his sons and daughters." So the pasuk is calling them sons and daughters, yet at the same time provoking Hashem. A son doesn't provoke a father. Not meant to. A daughter doesn't provoke a father, a mother. And I think that in Yalkut and Sifri, if you look in Yalkut and Sifri, I think Rabbi Yehuda asks this question. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Pshat in the Pasuk, Vayar Hashem Vayinotz. Vayinotz is Miloshen Noe, beautiful, pleasant. They provoke the Ribbono Shel Olam with their very beauty, with their pleasantness. When they're in a situation of bonav ubnois of their sons to the Ribbono Shel Olam, their daughters, they're close to Hashem, yet at the same time the Naatzim Lefonov, they can provoke his anger. As the Gaon is Goris Beshar Shehim Nirim Lefonov, when they are still in his good books, when they're still his sons and daughters, that at the very same time they go and provoke him, umid the ganze shenkeit, with that very beauty, they can sometimes provoke the Ribbono Shel Olam. By Matan Torah it says, Ve'elatzili b'nei Yisroel lo yisholach yodoi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't stretch out his hands, Ve'elatzili b'nei Yisroel, to the aristocrats, to the great men, to the elders of Klal Yisroel, they saw the Ribbono Shel Olam, they saw a sacred vision, they saw the Ribbono Shel Olam, vayoichlu vayishtu, they ate and they drank. When Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the elders, the aristocrats of Klal Yisrael, gazed at the sacred vision of the Ribbono Shel Olam, vayoichlu vayishtu, they ate and they drank. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't punish them, ve'latzilei b'nei Yisrael, lo yisholach es yodoi. And there's a machlokas rishonim here. Rashi, in the name of the Tanchuma, says pshat that they sinned grievously. At the same time as they saw a sacred vision of the Ribbono Shel Olam, what did they go and do? They went and indulged in food and drink. Vayoichlu vayitshtu. They harnessed those powers, that ultimate benefit that they had from seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam, and went and indulged in their own, for their own ulterior motives. Vayoichlu vayitshtu. They ate and drank. So says Rashi. Even so, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't punish them because they didn't want to mar the celebration of the giving of the Torah. But Unculus and the Ramban, they both interpret this pasuk in a favorable fashion. They say that the elders drank, they ate and drank in grateful celebration for the great spiritual privilege they had been given of gazing at the sacred vision of the Ribbono Shel Olam. They saw the Ribbono Shel Olam, they in a grateful celebration and thanksgiving to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they ate and they drank. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't punish them, because they did something good. So here we see the both sides of the picture over here, where a person can attain unbelievable heights, and he can use that, he can harness that for the good. Or according to Rashi, we can see the opposite, where a person can reach unbelievable heights, yet go and use that for his own ulterior motives. So says Rashi in the name of Tanchuma. This is our goal in life. Our goal in life is to reach the greatest heights possible, to climb and climb slowly but surely. But, of course, our avoid, our work has to be that we should try and reach a situation where it won't be shaloi lishma, it won't be for our own ulterior motives, but it'll end up being lishma, it'll be for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But whatever we do, shaloi lishma, lo'olam ya'aseh kodem b'Torah, shaloi lishma, a person should always perform mitzvahs and Torahs, even if it's for ulterior motives, because ultimately it'll end up lishma. That is our goal in life, and with that, may we be zoicha to all the good, to all the brachas from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.